Authentic Wellness Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to episode number 46 of Authentic Wellness Radio. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today's show is all about women's health and nutrition, and I've got dietitian Cassie on the line with me. Now, dietitian Cassie is the celebrity registered licensed dietitian and founder and CEO of Healthy Simple Life, an organization that focuses on helping people identify the root causes of health issues that healthcare practitioners often overlook, which we're going to be investigating quite a lot today because that's a big area. She and her team of registered dietitians provide evidence-based nutrition coaching in person, online, and over the phone. Through the power of real food, they help people find freedom from diets and chronic health conditions so they can live their life to the fullest without counting calories or points ever again. I remember counting calories when I was trying to lose weight. It was actually the worst thing that you could have possibly, that I could have possibly
tried. Me too.
Well, I'll bring you in now, actually. Cassie, thank you so much for joining me. You're a calorie counter as well, or a reformed calorie counter.
I'm a former calorie counter and former low-fat dieter, and never again will I do that to my body.
Isn't it just the worst torture you can do to yourself?
It's the worst. And, you know, we wonder why we feel awful doing it, why we have headaches and cravings and low energy levels. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it. When you don't give your body what it needs, it's not going to work efficiently for you.
Absolutely. Now, you've got a very, very interesting story around why you became a dietitian and why you're so passionate about this kind of stuff. What happened to you? What happened to your father? And why did you decide to do something about it?
Yeah, thanks for asking, David. It was definitely an adventure. You know, I always knew I wanted to do something in the healthcare field. So going into school to be a dietitian was a pretty easy choice for me. I was always interested in how food affected my body and performance. And I always, you know, I loved eating. Especially I liked eating sugar. So that became a problem for me in school to be a registered dietitian. I really felt like a fraud, like I was living two lives because I was constantly, you know, I was eating as well as I could and exercising just like I should be, but I was giving in to all these sugar cravings I was having. It's like I was acing all of my classes, but behind closed doors, I was really struggling. And, you know, there were so many times I tried to start clean and count, you know, follow a new calorie counting diet or low fat program, do a sugar detox. And I would wind up in the same place I was to begin with in a mere number of days. And every time I'd be so mad at myself for being too weak to control it, for, you know, not being able to stick to my own personal decisions. And I kind of came to the conclusion that maybe I was just flawed. So that's part of my story, is that years later, I realized that I had what I now know is sugar addiction. Because what I wasn't taught in school to be a dietitian, that a lot of people don't know, is that sugar has the same effect on the brain as cocaine. And for many people, you know, sugar sensitivity is real and it can be debilitating. And I was an addict. And then, you know, for me, that was going on. And then things got more serious for me when my father had an unexpected major heart surgery. And for as long as I could remember, he was the picture of health. He followed all of the diet rules. You know, he ate low fat and low calorie and, you know, never ate dessert. Yet he ended up in the hospital. So for me, something just didn't add up. You know, the doctors and dietitians told him to keep eating low calorie, keep eating low fat, keep avoiding butter and eggs and having oatmeal with, you know, bread and margarine and orange juice for breakfast. And that's really when I got angry. Because his low-fat, low-calorie diet is what landed him on the operating table. And that's when I became really determined to figure out what was going on with my sugar cravings, what was going on with the information my dad was being, you know, given that clearly wasn't really helping him. And I had to really turn into my own advocate and my dad's too. So that's when, you know, I really dug into the research and I found that what I was learning in school wasn't even taught on the best science in the field. It wasn't even based on that. And that's when I quit the low-fat, low-calorie dieting that it sounds like, David, you have experience with as well.
Yes.
And amazingly, I stopped being consumed with thoughts of food, and I stopped craving sugar, and I didn't have days without energy, and my brain never felt more clear and powerful. And fast forward to today, you know, I'm in the best shape of my life, and I never thought that was possible. For so long, I believed that, you know, a sugar addiction, which I didn't even know it was at the time, I thought that was just part of my identity, my genetics, me. And that was a lie. And that's why I'm passionate about what I get to do today, because it's no wonder our country, you know, our world is getting fatter and sicker, because there's so much misinformation out there based on outdated research. And it's my mission to share the truth and the power of real food with as many people as possible.
Well, I'm very glad that I've got you on the line to do that today. Now, you said something interesting a couple minutes ago. You were talking about how you felt like a failure when you'd try a new diet or something that you knew you should probably change and it didn't stick. And then a couple of days later, you'd be back to where you started. If someone's out there trying to change their eating pattern or their nutrition, it can feel like a battle between what you've always done and your own willpower. And we usually lose those kinds of things. Is nutrition about that or is it something different?
You know, it makes me really mad when we're told to just stop eating, you know, whatever you keep eating, and that it's all about willpower, because it's not all about willpower, and that makes us feel like a failure. What it's really about is getting all of your systems in balance and, you know, providing your body with what it needs at a biochemical level. So, you know, just as an example, because sugar cravings and sugar addiction is close to my heart, when you get a sugar craving, it's a biochemical response in your brain. Due to a variety of reasons. Number one, your blood sugar levels might be low, and your brain knows that when your blood sugar levels are low, it just needs sugar to raise them. So you get a craving and you feel the compulsion to grab sugar. Or it could be because you don't have enough of the neurochemicals, the neurotransmitters, the brain chemicals that are they're in charge of whether or not you get sugar cravings. So to say it's just about willpower, and, you know, just stop, just have one and just stop, that's not even fair to say. And that's what drives me nuts, is because I tried that for so long and it just didn't work for me until I really started to implement some key strategies that helped me to balance out my biochemistry and support the production of neurotransmitters, those brain chemicals that determine whether or not you get sugar cravings.
I totally agree with that. And when I was trying to lose weight myself, I was so lucky that I happened upon a book that kind of recognized that and didn't just say, you know what would help you lose weight? Just stop eating a little bit. Like, yeah, that would have been really upsetting for me. So let's go to the next question. When someone sits down to eat food, what is the actual purpose of doing that? Like, why do we eat?
I think that's a great question. I think there's a lot of reasons why we eat. I mean, of course, we eat for enjoyment and for social purposes. A lot of meals and, you know, coffee dates and things like that revolve around food. I think food is for enjoyment, but primarily, you know, food is for fuel. And I think that's where we've gotten so far removed when we look at how we've restricted for so long and counted calories and tried to eat, you know, lower fat and just, you know, all these different diets out there that really limit the amounts that we're putting into our body. You know, your body doesn't work that way. Just like a car needs gas to run, your body needs fuel. So I like to view food as fuel, and every chance I eat, I view as an opportunity to nourish my body the best that I can so I can have the most energy, the most brain power, the best sleep, the best moods. And that's kind of the way that we look at it, is that food, you know, it's exciting. It's an opportunity to gain something from it, instead of viewing it as a negative thing, and, you know, that you're trying to restrict and stay away from and that you give into. It kind of makes me sad that food has such a negative connotation associated with it a lot of the time. And I think that food is amazing and exciting.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, it's fuel. But if you were to say that word to most people these days, like fuel and energy and whatnot, they would think coffee, not food. Why do you think, why does that happen, and why is food so much better than coffee when you're looking for energy?
Well, I think that food is what our bodies were designed to run on. And I'm not going to knock on coffee at all, because I'm drinking some right now and I think coffee is amazing as well. But I think that that's actually because, you know, we've just been brainwashed for so long, since the 1970s, really. We've been, you know, taught, you know, that low fat is the best way to go. And I think it was that low fat trend that really caused us to start counting calories, since fat has more calories than protein and carbohydrates do. So I think we really need to do some unbrainwashing around that whole concept that food is fuel, and that in order to see the results that you're looking for, be it more energy or weight loss or improved digestion, really whatever it is, your body needs fuel, food, to be able to, you know, complete that efficiently. And you want your body to work for you, not against you. And anytime you restrict what your body needs, like let's just say you're restricting calories, your body's gonna slow down to conserve energy. because it knows that it needs, you know, the fuel to work properly. So when we really think about it that way and we take a step back, it's like, well, no wonder when we're dieting, we feel awful. You know, no wonder we can't reach our goals. And, you know, and I think the confusing thing is sometimes we can lose weight really quick when we restrict. So we think about it that way and, you know, we get it. We think that dieting works. The problem is most diets leave us more frustrated and eventually heavier in the long run because they're not healing from the inside out. They're a quick fix that, you know, mess up your metabolism. And then when you do eat again, because you eventually have to eat again, your body knows that it needs that fuel. Your body hangs on to whatever you give it because now it doesn't trust you. And that's why dieting doesn't work. And that's actually usually why our clients end up making an appointment with us, because they've tried every pill, powder, potion, diet out there, and it's left them feeling more frustrated than they were to begin with, and usually more unhealthy, because dieting can also contribute to not just the messed up metabolism, but hormonal imbalance and impaired thyroid function and all sorts of other problems. So if you only, you know, get one takeaway from listening today, I hope it's that food is fuel and that you need to be consuming, you know, quality food on at regular intervals, regular times, which can be different for each person, but you need to be fueling your body regularly for it to work its best.
I feel like food's kind of gone the same way as exercise, in that it's turned into something that we're obliged to do these days. Like, people will come into my gym and they'll say, oh, my doctor told me to exercise, or I know I'm overweight, so I have to exercise or whatever. And they don't really see it as something they get to do. And it's the same with changing food. But when you're on the other side and you're eating healthy, it's like, I would never go and choose to eat something bad on purpose because it would taste good, because that'd be like staring into the sun. Like, I just don't understand why you would not do what makes you feel better.
Well, I think it's all in the mindset, because when you said that, it reminded me of how, you know, we'll have certain clients come to us at their first appointment and say, whatever you do, don't take away my bread, or don't take away my 3 glasses of wine every single night, or, you know, whatever it is that they're afraid to lose. And the exciting thing is that when it comes down to it, I mean, it's empowering to know how something affects your body, and then you get to choose whatever you want to do with that information. So, you know, when they, at their first appointment, they may have said not that they weren't going to take away, you know, they weren't going to remove the bread that they were eating. But then a few weeks or a few months into the program, they find out that that bread is causing them migraine headaches every single day. It's causing them sleepless nights and hot flashes. You know, wine could do the same thing. And when you really realize how something is affecting you, it's not that hard to give it up. You know, especially dairy, I think, is a big one that can be really intimidating to remove from your eating regimen. And I think like 70% of people are sensitive to dairy, and you don't have to have an allergy to have a food sensitivity. So these people may have gotten allergy testing and, you know, nothing came up. But then when it comes down to it, when we take the dairy out of their eating regimen, you know, their skin improves, their acne goes away, their constipation and diarrhea that they were having intermittently throughout the day at work completely goes away. And when those, when all these things start to improve that you never thought were possible, to, like, a lot of people just think that's the way they are. That's just what they have to deal with every day. It just, it stinks. It's life. It's who they are. But when they realize they have control over that based on what they're putting into their body, a lot of times that I could never give up mentality turns into, wow, this is empowering. I get to choose whether or not I have this food that is causing all of these issues. And I'm going to choose the food that, you know, makes me feel amazing instead of makes me feel awful. So it just comes down to a choice. And I like to try to embrace that empowering, positive mentality versus the don't eat this, don't eat this, don't eat this. Because in reality, we all get to decide what we eat or don't eat on a daily basis. It's just, I think it's exciting to learn how certain foods affect you.
I agree totally. So where would be the best place for people to start who want or need to overhaul or change a certain part of their diet? And what can we do to prevent overwhelm for them? Because I know I've been in a similar place to where you were, where honestly, if you looked at your diet, pretty much everything that you were eating, you'd know wasn't really the best idea. So where does someone begin with this changing nutrition?
Yeah, that is so, that's such a tough question to ask, because it's different for everyone and it's not necessarily a simple answer. And, you know, as dietitians, we like to think of ourselves as detectives. That's really where our detective skills come in, because there's a lot of different directions we would go with this based on the client and what their goals and their struggles and their blocks are. But in general, you know, there are a handful of key areas, these missing pieces of the puzzle that we need to focus on, that we help our clients with right off the bat to see faster results. So the first thing I would generally recommend starting with is gut health. You know, the gut is an essential and repeatedly overlooked starting point for achieving optimal health and, you know, preventing disease as well. And gut, you know, your gut is often referred to as the missing link. And its health is important for everyone, not just those with digestive issues. And I think that's where we get confused sometimes, is we think about the gut and we think, I don't have bloating, gas, or constipation or diarrhea, so I'm good. But the truth is, you know, our gut health is impaired from a lot of things like, you know, consuming sugar or dieting in the past, or stress, artificial sweeteners, overexercise, lack of sleep. A lot of different things we do on a day-to-day basis, intentionally or not, wreak havoc on our gut. And what happens then is that causes chronic inflammation. So I'm not talking about acute inflammation, like when you stub your toe or get a paper cut. I'm talking about this chronic inflammation that you can't see, you can't feel. It's low grade and systemic, but it's silently damaging your tissues, and it contributes to all sorts of health issues. And it's different for everyone. This is what's tricky about it. You know, inflammation can show up in one person as acne, and in one person as heart disease, and in one person as weight gain. And the problem is your body sees it as a fire, and it's always going to prioritize taking care of this inflammation, putting out this fire before anything else. So that means if you're struggling with, you know, lack of energy, difficulty losing weight, trouble sleeping, even those digestive issues, it's going to be nearly impossible for your body to fix those without you, you know, taking it into your hands and helping to reduce that inflammation first. So, you know, and I'm mentioning this, you know, before even mentioning the food, because the truth of the matter is, if you're not in the proper state to digest the nutrients and absorb them, it's kind of a wash. You know, eating healthy food is only half of the nutrition story. You have to be in the ideal state to digest food too.
Mm. That's something that is surprisingly under-addressed in the nutrition world these days. I mean, you can have literally the best perfect diet that's totally set up for you in the world, and if your digestive system doesn't work properly, then it's basically sabotaging all that good food you've put in there. So how does someone start paying attention to the effect of digestion versus the effect of the food that they're eating on their overall health?
Yeah, so I think a good first step, after I just talked about keeping things positive, I'm going to throw out a negative first, is keep your sugar intake low. You know, refined carbohydrates, sugar, processed foods, these create an environment in your gut flora, in your gut, where these bad bacteria thrive, and that can really promote that inflammation. So with carbohydrates, I recommend trying to get them from vegetables and fruits, you know, versus the bread and the pasta and the rice, and having, you know, plenty of healthy fat and protein at your meals as well. That'll help you keep your carb and sugar intake lower, because those will help to fill you up. You know, so trying to keep sugar out, and even, you know, keeping other foods out that could damage the lining of your gut. If there's foods that you're sensitive to, like I mentioned dairy, you know, gluten is also a common one. I would say try not to eat those foods. And I know that sounds like a no-brainer, but you might be surprised at how many clients come to us and say, I know I have a sensitivity to, you know, this certain food, and I eat it anyway because it's too hard to not eat it. So I would say try to really, really keep these foods out, at least for the duration of the healing process when you're trying to really, you know, heal your gut. And then the second component would be start eating foods that, you know, help to heal that inflammation and restore your healthy gut bacteria. So healthy fat is a really great one. And we're talking about, you know, I'm a dietitian here saying I'm recommending butter, butter, olive oil, coconut milk, avocado. You know, if you can tolerate nuts and seeds, those are great healthy fats, olives, ghee, and then also fermented foods like kombucha, sauerkraut, kimchi. You know, if you can tolerate yogurt, those are also important for replenishing your good gut bacteria. And then the other part of it would be supplementing with key nutrients that really promote healing and help your gut heal a lot quicker than it could without supplementing. And not all supplements are created equal, so I do recommend looking for high-quality pharmaceutical-grade supplements, not just the ones that you're going to find on the shelf at the drugstore, because those aren't regulated, so they can contain a lot of different harmful ingredients, which is the opposite of what you're trying to do with supplements. The supplements that I recommend for gut health, though, are probiotics, glutamine, and fish oil. Do you recommend these ones too, David?
I do. I definitely do.
I love the combination of these three for healing the gut, because the probiotics, you know, those boost the good bacteria in your gut. And they kind of do a similar thing to eating the fermented foods I talked about, the kombucha, the sauerkraut, the kimchi. The problem is most people aren't eating fermented foods on a regular basis. And even if they are, you know, we can get a really good boost of good bacteria from a probiotic supplement. So almost everyone can benefit from taking a probiotic at least, you know, once a day. And then L-glutamine, this is probably my favorite supplement in the whole world and one that I really couldn't live without. First of all, it might be the most effective gut healer of all. It plays a vital role in rebuilding, healing, and maintaining the structural lining of your digestive tract. Has anti-inflammatory properties. It protects your cell walls. It really promotes the digestion and nutrient absorption while reducing that inflammation. But what I love about it is that it helps to get rid of sugar cravings, and it helps to prevent sugar cravings. And if you have a sugar craving, it helps them go away. And that's because L-glutamine is it's the most abundant amino acid in your body. It's a building block of those neurotransmitters I mentioned that determine whether or not you have sugar cravings. So that's like a little bonus tip: L-glutamine for sugar cravings. We have it in both capsule and powder form, and I always have the capsules with me in my work bag or purse. And then when I'm at home, I mix the powder with water into a smoothie to really help prevent those sugar cravings.
And it's funny that you mentioned neurotransmitters in a discussion about digestion, but most people don't know this. There are more neurons in your stomach than there are in your brain and spinal cord. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, they're created in your gut. And a lot of people don't make that brain-gut connection. I mean, even your immune system, you know, 80% of it is found in your gut. There's so much that takes place in your gut. So your brain health really does begin in your gut. And if people are having memory issues, you know, sugar cravings, foggy thinking, all of that would tell me it's a red flag to focus on your gut health. Yeah, I'm glad that you pointed that out.
I was going to say that earlier, but I didn't want to interrupt you. You were saying that not everyone who has digestive problems actually has digestive symptoms. For me, I know the very first thing, and it's really instant, that happens if I eat something that I really shouldn't, is brain fog straight away. I just sit in a chair just like I've had 1,000 drinks and can't do just about anything. I'm useless.
Yeah. I'm glad that you point that out, because a lot of people don't make that connection.
Yeah, so it really could be anything. But sorry, I interrupted you.
I'm glad you pointed that out. Even like, you know, when people are nervous or have anxiety, a lot of times they'll notice that they'll have gut issues, you know, stomach ache or constipation. So now that people are listening, they're going to start to make those connections in their own life. So I'm really glad that you pointed that out.
Yeah, it's a huge one to be aware of what actually happens when something's going wrong inside, because it's easy to just pass this kind of stuff off as like, oh, I'm getting old, or I hurt this knee when I was in school and that's why it's always sore now. But usually it's got to do with food. Now, I interrupted you on your third point there. You were going to talk about fish oil.
Yeah, the third point is fish oil. I mean, pretty simple. A lot of people know fish oil is, you know, good for the heart, good for the brain. That's because it provides omega-3 fatty acids, and those target inflammation and reduce inflammation. So it's just going back to what we're trying to do here is get rid of this inflammation that's been caused by, you know, sugar and stress and antibiotics, or, you know, past dieting or consuming substances you're sensitive to. We're trying to heal the gut. So that's why fish oil is extremely beneficial, because it helps to reduce that inflammation in our gut. And even if we're eating fish, even every day, we're probably not getting the omega-3s that are necessary to support the healing process. So that's a simple but really effective supplement for healing the gut.
Mm. Do you know Doug Kaufman?
I don't think so.
So he has a trick that he does where he tells people to freeze their fish oil tablets. And then that way it won't get digested in the stomach. It'll go through to the intestine, where there's usually inflammation that doesn't get reached by the fish oil that would have gotten digested in the stomach. What are your thoughts on that?
I have never heard of that before. That's really interesting. I'd be curious to see if there were any research studies on that, because that would be really neat. That
personally
sounds like a great trick.
I've got no idea about the science behind any of that, but I know Doug Kaufman, and he's a very clever man, so maybe that's one worth experimenting with.
Yeah, maybe. Great.
So you mentioned earlier that dietitians are really like investigators. How does someone start to figure out what might be some really big areas that could be holding them back and then address them? Because, I mean, you said that gluten can be a huge issue, sugar can be a huge issue, but these things can affect some people way more than others. So how do we get our little detective hats on and figure this out?
Well, so first I'll clarify that, you know, my team of dietitians are detectives, but not all dietitians have the same approach. I mean, when I'm almost embarrassed to say that my first several years of being a dietitian, I was still kind of figuring all of this out. And, you know, what we're taught in school is really, you know, like I mentioned at the beginning, it's not based on science. We're taught how to figure out how many calories someone needs and to make sure that they're burning the calories they're consuming and eating low fat for weight loss and all of these, all of the things that have really been making both me and my dad sicker. So I wouldn't recommend just making an appointment with a dietitian, you know, randomly. I would really look into that dietitian's process and views and beliefs, because this is really a field right now that is, it's changing a lot. We're getting a lot more dietitians that have a real food approach, but there are still plenty of dietitians out there that are teaching, you know, diets that are based on, you know, information that is found in dusty old textbooks and not on the science. And a lot of our clients come to us after they've already met with a dietitian in the past, and the program they were on was a cookie cutter approach that didn't customize anything and just told them to, you know, basically avoid food and calories. And that actually messed up their metabolism and hormones and everything more than helped. So I'd be careful there. But, you know, when I talk about being detectives, what we really do, what I mean by that, is we hold up a magnifying glass to your symptoms, which is the evidence, and we really put the pieces together to help build your case. So we help you to narrow down the suspects involved in your personal crime scene, the crime keeping you from reaching your goals and living that healthy, vivacious, vibrant life that you want to lead. And that's the main reason our clients make an appointment with us, is because they need someone to investigate their crime scene and figure out who's behind the crime of their weight gain, their digestive distress, their inflammation, infertility. So we help to identify the root causes, the missing puzzle pieces, the real things blocking you from reaching your goal. You know, you can do some of this on your own, but, you know, I always say, you know, stick with what you're good at. And it's, you know, you can consult Dr. Google and try to figure some things out on your own. But really, the fastest, most effective path would be going to a dietitian detective and letting them help guide you through the process. Because, you know, I think sometimes asking for help can seem like a weakness, but I really think it's one of the greatest strengths, is saying, I've tried this on my own and it's not working. And I want to, you know, I'm asking you to be my GPS and putting me on the fastest tracks. So I don't have to keep, you know, dinking around with the puzzle pieces on my own anymore and not seeing the results that I'm looking for. That said, simple things you can do on your own to really get started, you know, sleep, lack of sleep. Sometimes sleep seems like a luxury, but, you know, inadequate sleep is way too common. And, you know, if you don't get enough sleep, you face a lot bigger concerns than just fatigue. You know, sleep controls hormones that regulate your appetite and your metabolism, not to mention the key role it plays in immunity, which you also need working in your favor, not just for being healthy, but to keep your metabolism boosted too. So sleep is a big one. A lot of people are sleep deprived. You can focus on that right off the bat. Managing your stress levels, you know, today's demanding lifestyles put more stress in our bodies than they were designed to handle. And a lot of us just brush it off like it's not a big deal. And your gut is intricately connected to your state of mind. Kind of, I talked about earlier, you know, stress affects your gut health. And obviously your gut health determines whether or not you have sugar cravings or, you know, brain fog or a slow metabolism. So getting stress under control is really, you know, an important piece of the inflammation puzzle, because stress sets the stage for inflammation and can slow down your metabolism. And it really matters. So that's another one that people can do on their own. And when it comes to food sensitivities, I've mentioned a couple times, and I want to just clarify a little bit more that these are at the root of many of our clients' difficulties with weight loss. And a lot of people find through the process of our elimination, this is where kind of our expertise comes in to make sure that they're meeting all of their nutrient needs during, you know, while they're eliminating certain foods, they find that they have a food sensitivity that was standing in the way of their weight loss goal. And the most common culprits are gluten and dairy. Nearly 50 million Americans, I'm not sure about Australians, but more than 50 million Americans and more than 70% of the world's population are dairy intolerant. And then about 40% of people in the world have a gluten sensitivity. And again, this doesn't mean you have an allergy. It's perfectly normal for an allergy test to show that you're not allergic. You can still have a sensitivity. And time, you know, going back to that fire we talked about earlier, your body putting out that inflammation fire, if you're eating foods that you have a sensitivity to on a regular basis, an inflammatory reaction takes place in your body, and you're not going to lose weight, you're not going to have energy, you're going to be tired, you're not going to feel good, because your body is going to focus on healing the areas that are affected, damaged, and inflamed by the food that you're eating. When you have that chronic inflammation going on, you know, the last thing your body's going to focus on is losing weight or energy. So the best way to determine if you have a food sensitivity is to completely eliminate the food for 4 to 6 weeks, which can sound like a long time, but that's really what it takes to determine whether or not you're sensitive to something. And then pay attention to how your body reacts when you have or don't have this food in your daily eating regimen.
Mm. And that is a huge thing. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but there are so many more people with food intolerances now than there really should be. But let's say eggs, for example. I know I'm intolerant to eggs and I can't eat them, but for some people, they're absolutely the most brilliant food in the world. Now, I know if I go and eat something like eggs and I'm intolerant to them, that eventually I'm going to gain weight. Why does that kind of stuff happen, and why can food intolerances make people or stop people from losing weight, even though there's still a calorie in or a certain amount of calories in an egg, whether you're intolerant to it or not?
Yeah, I think it just goes back to the inflammatory reaction that occurs in your body. You know, it's not just about calories in, calories out. There's such a, our metabolism is so complex. And what happens when you put something in your body that you're sensitive to is it's like it starts a fire in your body, and your body has to put out that fire. And especially if it's something that you're putting in your body on a regular basis that you're sensitive to, your body is always trying to catch up and put out that fire and, you know, heal that inflammation. Your body's main priority is to keep you alive. So anytime you're putting something in your body that is harmful to it, it's going to, you know, kick it into high gear to take care of that first. So, you know, especially we see that happen sometimes with clients who find out that they have a food sensitivity. So they stop eating that certain food and they start losing weight, and then they add that food back in because they get a little confident and they're like, well, I've already lost some weight. This is great. I'll probably be fine adding it back in. But once they add it in, the weight loss stops. And that's because your body's like, okay, let's, instead of focusing on this, we're going to focus on this, because the inflammation is the most important thing to your body to keep it alive.
Mm. Especially inflammation in the digestive system, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm.
So something that you mentioned earlier was hormones. What would be some really good eating strategies that you could suggest for everyone out there listening around eating well for their hormones? And what would be some of the worst things that people could do?
That's a good question. There's so many hormones involved in metabolism and even just how the body works in general. And hormones matter. I mean, underneath it all, if your hormones are imbalanced, it's tough for any of the pieces of your puzzle to come together. Hormones are one of the reasons why I hate calories, because your body just can't be simplified into a math equation, since its functions are controlled by hormones, which act as chemical messengers and respond differently to the different macronutrients, which are, you know, your PFC, your protein, your fat, and your carbohydrates. So the main thing, I think, which is kind of the foundation of my recommended eating approach, is to make sure you're consuming protein, fat, and carbohydrates. It's that combination of P, F, and C. Generally, when we start out with a client, we have them doing that every 3 to 4 hours during the day to keep their blood sugar levels balanced. Now, you know, I'm gonna also put a disclaimer here. That's not the case for everyone. I mean, you might find that you're able to go several hours without eating. You might find that intermittent fasting works for you. There's a lot of different schools of thought on this. But with our clients who are coming to us with a history of messed up metabolism, hormonal imbalance, and a history of dieting, they're so far removed from their hunger sensor that we really try to get them back to that place where they're able to listen to their body and support their metabolism the best by eating PFC every three. So the reason for all three is because protein throughout the day boosts your metabolism. Protein can actually increase your metabolism up to 35% for the following 2 to 3 hours after you eat it. So you can see how having that every few hours would keep your metabolism and energy levels boosted during the entire day. And then fat, you know, I love fat probably by now. Fat boosts metabolism. And the reason is because it acts as a buffer for the carbohydrates that we consume. You know, on their own, carbohydrates can slash metabolism by spiking your blood sugar levels really high, which causes your fat storing hormone, insulin, to be secreted. So a carbohydrate on its own can cause fat storage. Now, when you consume fat, healthy fat with that carbohydrate, it slows down the assimilation, the absorption of the carb, the sugar from the carbohydrate into your bloodstream. So that's why I recommend healthy fat every single time you eat.
Now, and then keep going.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, for carbohydrates, I do recommend having some carbohydrates. But like I mentioned earlier, the best choice would be the real food carbohydrates, the vegetables, and maybe some fruit as well.
Mm. Now, I was talking with someone about this the other day, and I said, I was looking at their food diary, and it was like a definite breakfasty kind of food, and then a definite lunchy type food, and then a definite dinner type food, which is what most people do. And I said to her, what is the real purpose of eating? Like, is there any difference in what the outcome is that you're looking for from breakfast versus what the outcome is that you're looking for from dinner? Like, you don't eat food to wake you up in the morning and you don't eat food to make you go to sleep at night. Like, food is just food and you eat because your body needs what's in the food. So should someone's, well, how many people do you see who don't eat these proteins and these fats and these carbs frequently enough? Because if I think to the way that most people eat, they're probably doing that quite well for dinner. Most people aren't getting much protein or fat in for breakfast, and most people don't get much protein and fat for lunch. So really only once every 24 hours are they getting this full spectrum of nutrients that they need. How often do you see that?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And isn't it funny too that we're like the only species on the planet that has certain breakfast foods, you know? And you look at our typical breakfast foods, what we think of as breakfast foods, and it's a carbohydrate bomb waiting to go off a couple hours later. You know, the pancakes and the cereal and the toast and the orange juice and the fruit on the side, you know, the whole grain toast, it's all just carbohydrates. So, you know, especially women, most of our clients, you know, the majority are women. And it seems like they're, you know, not only are they afraid of fat for the most part, but they're also kind of a little bit afraid of protein. You know, we hear about vegan diets and vegetarian diets, and there's always a new study about every 6 months or so that makes us afraid of red meat, you know, which is just, you know, not based on any science ever. And if you're consuming quality proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, then it's fine to consume all of them. But I think because of that, you know, you're right. Most people are consuming mostly carbohydrates at all of their meals and snacks if they're having any. And then maybe the only time they'll have protein is at dinner. And that's not good for your metabolism. That means you're riding the blood sugar roller coaster all day long. That's what I call it, is the blood sugar roller coaster, when we're basically consuming, you know, carbohydrates, which spike our blood sugar levels. And then anything that goes up must come down. So an hour or two later, your blood sugar levels drop. And that's when you feel like you're starving and you crave sugar, because your brain is so smart and it knows that your blood sugars are low. So now you need sugar. So you run to, you know, the vending machine or the coffee shop to get a mocha and a muffin. And then again, you're back on that blood sugar roller coaster. You're spiking them and they drop. And it's like this vicious cycle that is not good for your metabolism. It's not good for your moods or your cravings. And it's causing you to be continually storing fat all day long. So we want to break this cycle and add in healthy fat and protein every single time you eat. And that'll actually help get rid of the sugar cravings, especially if you're having L-glutamine throughout the day as well. And that'll just keep you more balanced. And you'll not only feel amazing, but you'll be able to reach all of your goals a lot quicker.
Mm. Now, I find it's a lot easier to add stuff in before taking stuff out. So instead of
I do too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Before addressing someone's gluten intolerance, for example, like, make sure that they're actually eating some food that they can have that's healthy, like chicken or whatever, for breakfast, before you just take away their cereal and their pancakes and their toast and just leave them with nothing. Is there any other kind of areas where you can think of things that could be added in before stuff gets taken away?
Well, I think, yeah, adding in the protein and fat, you'll just naturally eat less carbohydrates without even trying. Like at breakfast, if you're having 3 eggs cooked in a couple tablespoons of butter or coconut oil, that's what I start with right there. And I might mix in some spinach. I might have some berries or an orange on the side. But I find that to be so filling and satisfying that I don't find the need to even think about pouring myself a bowl of cereal or having, you know, some toast on the side. So I think when we structure our meals around the protein and the fat, it's so natural to not even crave or want the carbohydrates. And a lot of our meals are based on carbohydrates when we follow the standard, you know, eating regimen, you know, having a big bowl of pasta at dinner and then just throwing a little bit of meat on top of it, or having a sandwich at lunch, which is really, you know, two huge pieces of bread with a tiny bit of meat in the middle and maybe a slice of cheese if you're lucky. So kind of changing that mindset and restructuring the meal and making protein and fat the focus, and then sprinkling your carbohydrates in there, that's really the way that I design the plate.
Mm, absolutely. Now, last question I want to get to. Let's talk about dietitians. Now, I imagine this is an industry that's very similar to the exercise industry that I work in. And I strongly believe if you've been an exercise professional for more than 5 years, you're either completely brilliant at it or you're totally useless. I don't think there are any kind of people out there who are just like average trainers who've been sort of thinking about studying and getting better and whatnot. And I'm sure it's the same with dietitians. So are they all worth seeing, or are some of them, you know, just not quite up to scratch? And how do we know when there's all these things going around, like studies about red meat that you mentioned, which are written by nutrition organizations and dietitians, or there are dietitians out there putting a little tick on a healthy breakfast cereal that they've designed? Or there's all this allergy testing where people can go and see dietitians and they say, no, you don't have a dairy intolerance or a dairy allergy. And you're here saying, well, that probably doesn't mean that much. Or, you know, nutritionists out there saying, well, eat oats and that'll lower your cholesterol. And just all this crazy science. Like, how do we figure out what's actually happening out there?
It's really tough. I mean, it's definitely confusing. And I mean, I want to just start by saying I'm not trying to put down other dietitians. I was there at one point. I mean, the very curriculum we were taught in school, it's based on, I never realized how many things were controlled by money. I mean, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics is funded by companies like Pepsi, Coca-Cola, General Mills, and McDonald's, which when you think about it, it's really convenient. So I would go to these conferences and they'd be giving us samples of, you know, diet soda and, you know, Egg McMuffins and things like that, which, I mean, that when your education is based on that, it's no wonder it gets a little bit skewed. So, you know, a lot of dietitians, especially, it takes a lot of time to really go out and do the research on your own. It's kind of a scary thing to essentially go against the grain, so to speak, you know, and teach something different. And I still get a lot of flack for my teachings not being in line with what I was taught in dietitian school. So I know that it's a scary thing, and it's not for everyone. But I think when it comes down to it, you just have to look at what's working and what's not. You know, another thing that I found this is another wake-up call for me was when I worked in a hospital setting with a bunch of other dietitians. I was working in an outpatient clinic where I was helping people with, you know, weight loss, and they would come in. And they'd be on these, you know, restricted calorie diets. And I had noticed the trend that the further the dietitian restricted their calories, the more weight they gained. And here's the kicker. These were actually patients who were on tube feeding diets. So they weren't eating any food. So we could actually control exactly how many calories, grams of protein, fat, and carbs they were getting. So this was when I really scratched my head and thought, how on earth has this patient gone from 1,800 calories to 1,500 to 1,200 to 1,000? They're down to 800 calories and they're gaining weight. And that, you know, those like light bulb moments are really what led me to dive deep into the research and get to where I am today with a very different approach to nutrition, more of a, you know, healing from the inside out, identifying your root cause, functional medicine based approach. And not every dietitian does that. So if you're searching for, you know, a dietitian detective, I like to call it, really read about their approach, learn what their views are. I mean, if they have a website, I would think that on the main page of their website, there should be something about, you know, what is our philosophy? What, you know, what do I believe? And what do I teach? Because you're really looking for somebody who, you know, has an approach that doesn't make you limit grams of fat or count calories or points or morsels or anything else. You're looking for something that's not a quick fix or a detox plan that might leave you, you know, feeling frustrated and further from your goals. Your goal is to heal your body and metabolism from the inside out so that you don't land right back where you started.
Mm. I'll add another one to that as well. Challenge your dietitian and see if they really can stand up to the scrutiny of what it is that you're trying to figure out. Because I know it, when I walked out of exercise coach school or whatever it was called 8 years ago now, I felt like I had no idea what was going on. And if you'd done some questioning about what I was telling you to do as an exercise coach, you would have been able to tell straight away I had no idea. I knew like the idea and the concept, like, oh, you should eat oats because it'll make your cholesterol go down. Why is that? I'm not sure. That would have been my answer pretty much. Like
exactly. Yeah. So challenge them, ask them for the research studies. And, you know, another thing that I find interesting is that, or not interesting, I guess it's more of just kind of heartbreaking, is that when people are following this advice given to them by their dietitian, but it's not working, it's like they're the failure. And it's like, they feel like they're doing something wrong and like they feel shameful because it seems like they're lying or, you know, something else is going on. Because when your dietitian says do this and you do it and you come back and you're like, it's not working. I mean, that's a very shameful approach. So, you know, you should be digging deeper. It shouldn't just be about calories in and calories out. You should be looking at thyroid and your lab data. You know, your dietitian should be able to interpret your lab data and tell you that your total cholesterol means squat. You've got to look at the breakdown, and it's not just about it's not just about the food. There are so many non-food aspects that go into your metabolism and your health. So do research on your dietitian, drill them with questions, and make sure that their approach is in line with what you know in your heart is true.
Absolutely. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, Cassie, but I've got one last question for you, just out of curiosity's sake for everyone who's listening. What does a normal day of eating look like for you?
That's a good question. So I follow the approach that I outlined where I eat every 3 to 4 hours to keep my blood sugar levels stable, and I take those gut healing supplements before all three of my meals to make sure my sugar cravings stay at bay. I start out with breakfast, you know, within a half hour of waking up in the morning. It's either eggs every single day or it's a smoothie. So with my eggs, you know, I cook them in butter or coconut oil, usually a couple tablespoons. That's my healthy fat. The eggs are my protein. I add in some spinach, maybe saute a little bit of sweet potato. That's my carb. And then whatever I didn't have for breakfast. So usually I have the eggs at breakfast, a smoothie for a mid-morning snack. And my smoothie is, what I love about smoothies is they're so simple and you can make them so balanced. You can jam pack them with nutrition. So I add in a couple of scoops of protein powder. I use usually half of an avocado, or I might add in a couple of tablespoons of nut butter for my fat. And I'll throw in either a half a banana or a handful of berries for my carbohydrate. And I'll mix in my glutamine powder, my multivitamin powder, my liquid vitamin D. I get a lot of different supplements mixed in there. And that's my morning snack. And then for lunch, I usually have a big salad with a lot of protein. So this is where you want to be careful, is don't skimp on the protein, especially when you have a salad. You know, if you're at a restaurant, you're probably going to want to order double the portion of protein because, you know, restaurants tend to skimp on the protein. So you want to have at least like this thickness and circumference of the palm of your hand. That's how much protein you want to have. So it's usually at least a few ounces. So I'll have maybe some chicken on my salad. And then for fat, I'll put, you know, a couple tablespoons of nuts or seeds. I'll use like a balsamic or an olive oil based dressing. And then, you know, in the afternoon, my snack is usually either tuna or chicken or salmon salad. I just use the canned stuff and I mix a few ounces of that in with usually a couple tablespoons of olive oil, or I might use real mayonnaise, not Miracle Whip, but like the real stuff. And then I usually mix in a couple tablespoons of pumpkin seeds for a little extra healthy fat. And then dinner, you know, typical dinner doesn't have to be anything crazy. We're talking about, you know, your meat or your fish. And then I have my vegetable on the side with probably some melted butter over it. I usually have a non-starchy vegetable like green beans or broccoli or cauliflower, along with a starchier vegetable like peas or sweet potato. And I try to limit that one to like a half a cup or so, since the starchy vegetables can impact your blood sugar levels a lot more. The non-starchy vegetables don't turn into quite as much sugar. And then I definitely have a bedtime snack every single night. And this is the only time of the day that I don't eat protein, because protein, for a lot of people, it boosts your metabolism so much that it can interfere with your ability to fall asleep. So I just have fat and carbohydrate at bedtime. And usually it's some frozen berries, like a half a cup or so, with a couple tablespoons of heavy cream over them. So it's like a sorbet. Sometimes I'll do, I'll saute like a pear on the stove with some coconut oil, top it with a little bit of cream and slivered almonds or walnuts if I feel like being fancy. Or I might just have a handful of nuts and a handful of berries and call it good. So that's my daily eating regimen. I'm eating throughout the day, you know, pretty small meals and snacks, but I'm eating a lot, and it keeps my metabolism and energy levels boosted and my sugar cravings away.
I think for everyone out there who's listening who might be worried about the idea of healthy food being boring or mean that they've got to miss out, I think you just destroyed that idea.
Did I bust it?
Yeah. That sounds like an amazing day's worth of eating.
Yeah. You know, people are always commenting on how much I eat because I'm not a very big person. And, you know, my answer is that you want to make sure, again, like I'm just going to drill this into our heads today, that you're fueling your body so that your body is, your metabolism is continually revved up. You know, I can tell if I haven't eaten for 4 hours because I'm starting to feel cranky and irritable. And that's because my blood sugar levels are low. So if you're hungry or if you're feeling that way, by all means, eat and fuel your body and give it what it needs. And it's going to work better for you.
Absolutely agreed. Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on, Cassie. I can't thank you enough. For everyone out there who's listening, I'm going to read out Cassie's website right now. This is a difficult one because this is different to the Australian spelling. You say it's the correct way to spell this word, but it's dietitiancassie.com. That's dietiancassie.com. That's where you can find Cassie. She's got an amazing blog on there, which I absolutely love. I've been reading through it recently, and there's some really good stuff on there that everyone can go and learn something from. But Cassie, thank you so much for joining me. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, David. And if anyone is interested in getting help from one of our dietitian coaches, that website is healthysimplelife.com, where you can find my team of coaches and learn how to apply for our program.
Go and check it out, people. There's lots of good stuff over there as well. I have looked at that website too. Thank you so much, Cassie. Have a nice day.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here. I so appreciate it.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Authentic Wellness Radio.